This lecture is devoted to the career of the most nobly born artist in the entire history of French art, an artist who came from a family older and in many ways greater than those of the most recent kings of France, and an artist who was the only son of that family. Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec was the son of the Comte de Toulouse, and his mother was also from an old and noble French family. And so both mother and father, who happened, unfortunately for their son, to be first cousins, were from great families. As a result of this, Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec was raised as an aristocrat, knowing only other aristocrats, in a series of enormous country properties and the occasional visit to Paris with very large apartments. And as a child, was completely socially separated from urbanites, whether they were wealthy bourgeoisie or whether they were members of the working class. He knew only the lower orders of society if they were servants. And therefore his social abilities, his sense of the full range of modern society was not ingrained in him, was not taught to him when he was a child. Because his parents were first cousins, he had an inherited degenerative bone disease, which we now know a fair amount about. And there's a marvelous, relatively new biography of Toulouse-Lautrec by a great French scholar named a great scholar of French literature named Julia Frey, F-R-E-Y. And this biography is based upon a lot of the family papers that had been inaccessible to earlier biographies and tells us in rather grim detail the health difficulties that besieged this poor man, Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec, throughout his life. He died in an alcoholic stupor in 1901 when he was a relatively young man. And his life was of an extraordinary intensity and fullness. Most Frenchmen in the period of his greatness, the late 1880s and the decade of the 1890s, thought of him more as a popular artist and a graphic artist than as a painter. And many of us today know him as one of the great poster artists of all times, as an artist whose posters routinely sell now for hundreds of thousands of dollars or even more if they're in mint condition. His medium as a mature artist was as much the streets as the drawing rooms, and one saw his works of art posted on kiosks, on enormous proto-billboards on the sides of buildings. He designed tickets and posters and playbills and musical programs and all sorts of works of art that were for the world, that were to be distributed in the world rather than to be owned by the rich. He was also interested in illustrating magazines and popular journals and even the daily press on occasion. And for that reason, his art was everywhere. Now, I want to discuss Toulouse-Lautrec not as a graphic artist, but as a painter. He began to paint in earnest in the middle of the 1880s, when he was about 20 years old. Toulouse-Lautrec is born in 1864, and it was not till 1884 that his parents begin to indulge his fascination and interest in art. His uncle, Othon de Toulouse-Lautrec, sort of encouraged him to meet artists who represented the hunt and racing, things that were appropriate to an aristocratic culture. And in fact, there are great portraits of Toulouse-Lautrec's parents on horseback by an artist named Princetot, who was Toulouse-Lautrec's first teacher and was an appropriate teacher for a young aristocrat. But Toulouse-Lautrec was effectively a dwarf by his early 20s. He suffered terrible pain in his legs and lower back. His lips had grown enlarged. He was a kind of malformed and oddly ugly, but in another way, strangely beautiful, small man who, from the first time that he got permission from his family, from his mother, to have his own studio in 1884, began to learn about the city in which that studio was placed. His first studio, he went to art lessons at a studio in Montmartre called the Atelier Cormont. And that atelier had lots of foreign artists and artists of varying different types. And Toulouse-Lautrec got to know them, was a sort of oddball amongst them, and was a great aristocrat. And so everybody wanted to know him. And this gave him a chance for the first time in his life, really, in his early 20s, to interact with the world at large. And he was able to acquire, to rent a small room, a studio in Montmartre, which is the international artist neighborhood and the place where all the great cafes were. And he was sort of down the hill. Montmartre is, mont means mountain, and it's sort of a hill in Paris. And down at the foot of the hill is one of the great Haussmann boulevards called the Boulevard Clichy, which was a sort of sin central in Paris as then as now. And Toulouse-Lautrec spent his entire life having studios off the Boulevard Clichy, living appropriately with his mother in a rather grand apartment most of the time, but spending a lot of nights out. And what he did is to use his extraordinary ability to draw. The childhood drawings of Toulouse-Lautrec are incredibly febrile and nervous and brilliant. They're of extraordinary quality and virtuosity for a child, like many great artists. And this sort of his ability with a pencil and a pen to rapidly entrap the world around him was extraordinary. And when that world enlarged, when he was sort of unleashed by his parents to go into the Paris of Montmartre and Clichy, and to go into Paris at night, the sort of Paris, the Paris Nuit, this wonderful sort of sin and excitement and alcohol and dancing and beauty and gaiety and frivolity and freedom from social constraints. That Paris, Paris Nuit, became his Paris. It's not so much the Paris of his posters, though they oftentimes advertise performances and performers at well-known cafes and cabarets. But they do so in a way which is brilliantly colored and optimistic and charming, not difficult or dark or true. But in his paintings, made sometimes for public exhibition and sometimes simply for himself, he delves deeply into the lives of the men and women who gave themselves over to the entertainment industry in Paris in the late 1880s and early 1890s. And it was this industry which was, in some ways, Paris's number one industry for regional tourists, for Frenchmen who flocked into the city and who would spend a day going to the museums and seeing the palaces and going to Notre Dame and doing all the dutiful things that one does. But then the nights, going to the extraordinary cafes and night places that didn't exist in Rennes or Strasbourg or Lyon or Montpellier or Bordeaux. And to the foreigners who came increasingly to Paris, living for sometimes a few days and sometimes weeks or months or years, as we've learned from Mary Cassatt. Now, Toulouse-Lautrec, because he only had really studios in Montmartre with little beds in the corner, and didn't ever have to think in his mind that he lived in them, was able to have this abstract and distant relationship to the world around him as an observer who was, by dint of his own ill health and his odd body and his extraordinary name and his fame as an aristocratic artist, gave him a kind of distance, but also a kind of an ability to understand better than any aristocrat in the history of French art the lives of those who suffered. And what I'm going to do now is to take you on a little tour of Paris Nuit, beginning at the very beginning of his career as a major artist in the late 1880s and continuing through the 1890s. The first painting that we look at is called the Cirque Fernand. Paris had several permanent circuses by the early part of the 19th century. And in fact, during the Second Empire, two of them, the Cirque d'Hiver and the Cirque Fernand, built rather large new buildings on the boulevards so that one could go to permanent circuses all year round, rather than thinking of circuses as we often do as tent phenomenon and seasonal and temporary phenomenon. The Cirque Fernand was amongst the most famous of them, and it was a place where one could go from the afternoon all the way through the evening into the pretty late parts of the night. There were acts going on in it. You could pay with a ticket and go and sit in an available place and be amused for a while and then go back onto the boulevards, meet your friends at a cafe, go to a cabaret or something else. It was part of the entertainments of the city. This large painting, one of the earliest great Toulouse-Lautrec, probably his first masterpiece, is in the Art Institute of Chicago. And it places us not in the seats of the Cirque Fernand, but sort of in the middle of the air, as if we're an omniscient viewer. And what he's doing is applying to painting the sort of recipes that he was to learn and he was to apply to the graphic arts, which is to organize the surface, in this case of the canvas, rather than of the paper, though this is the size of a great big poster, with a series of strong graphic elements that read powerfully from a distance and enable one to sort of take the image at once rather than to place oneself in it. And this, the fantastic curves of the red-painted backs of the rows of seats around the oval of the Cirque Fernand becomes this huge setting. And we see two gentlemen in the center in a box in a place that's reserved for people who pay more money and who may not want to be seen or to sit next to others. And they're in the very center. And then others, a couple here with her, she's reading a paper or a playbill, a gentleman sitting by himself. Here, another figure here, and lots and lots and lots and lots of empty places. So he's telling us in this representation, which is not made for the Cirque Fernand, because if the Cirque Fernand was the client, I assure you the seats would be full. This is an image that's made as a painting rather than as a poster. And going around an endless monotony is this woman on horseback. She's seated on the side, her legs down like this. She has this kind of caricatured carrot head, top, brilliantly painted lips, a white caked face, and she's looking directly at this man who's whipping the horse and pushing her forward. And the sense of his cruelty and his linear, or not linear, the sense of this vast curve of his whole body, which seems to loom forward and which mimics the curve of his whip, which mimics the curves of the reds. And one sees this sort of ceaseless, sort of cruel whipping of the horse, so it does another round and another round and another round, almost like a clock going around in this extraordinary image. There's a little carrot-topped clown who's dancing on the edge, and this clown with this huge costume, his name was Boom Boom. And you can see why his name was Boom Boom. He had these huge balls, and he was like a huge ball, and he stood on this thing, and you always thought that the horse was going to knock him down, but he'd managed to get out of the way. He's like a human bowling pin for the horse. And this whole sort of exciting, graphic, very animated world of entertainment in the city was observed with such care and precision by Toulouse-Lautrec that we have to think back to Degas. And you'll remember in the lecture of Degas, we saw in the Cirque Fernand, in the same circus, an African-American woman named Miss Lala hanging from her teeth on a little thing and twirling around in the air. That image is so much more elegant and luxurious and contrived. This one conveys the energy of the circus with the energy of color and line. And its graphism and its command of color is something which is extraordinary. Now, Toulouse-Lautrec as an artist stands most firmly on the shoulders of Degas. He admired Degas enormously. He didn't know Degas very well, and I think Degas probably disapproved of him, not socially, but in other ways. But his project, Toulouse-Lautrec's project as an artist, is a project that's rooted in Degas' own slumming, his investigation of cafes, prostitutes, urban workers, people who form the large underbelly of French society, which Degas represented really for the first time in a highly contrived, realist manner. And what Toulouse-Lautrec does is to take one part of that investigation of Degas even further, and that is the part devoted to the café and the brothel. The café and the brothel are the two places that Toulouse-Lautrec made as his places. And he went to them so habitually that he learned their characters. He became himself a character in them. And anyone who's seen the film Moulin Rouge knows that Toulouse-Lautrec, like in all of these various versions of Paris Nuit or Paris Montmartre in the 1890s, was one of the characters in Paris Nuit, in addition to being the representer of it, the one who gives us the most visual information. Let's go right away to another beautiful painting in the Art Institute of Chicago. The first three paintings by Toulouse-Lautrec I'll show you were all in the Art Institute of Chicago, which has a great group of paintings and drawings and prints by Toulouse-Lautrec. This is a painting whose title, whose traditional title, tells us exactly where we are, and that is the Moulin de la Galette. And you'll all remember that we've already been to the Moulin de la Galette, and we've been to the Moulin de la Galette with Renoir. And we went with Renoir when we went with him to the Impressionist exhibition of 1877, where that painting was on a wall by itself. And you'll remember it. It's a painting of men and women dancing together in the daytime with wonderful light, still lifes with beer and white wine and little bits of fruit and a sense of sort of bonhomie and joie de vivre and healthiness. Which is extraordinary. Here we are now in 1889, 12 years later, and we're at the same place, but it's a place that's become seedier, as places do through time, and it's a place that's represented by Toulouse-Lautrec not in the daytime and not filled full of healthy young workers on an outing, but at night, and rather late at night, and at a time when the gaiety has become somewhat forced, and certain of the denizens of this place take a seat by themselves, waiting to be called up, waiting for something to happen. The crowd in the background is a fascinating one. We can identify, in fact, many of the people in them, because when you get sort of good at looking at Toulouse-Lautrec, you find his cousin and his friends and other artists and various and sundry famous performers whose names we know from his own posters and his own other works of art. In this work of art, this tall guy is his cousin, whose name was Thépier de Céloron, a wonderful, another great French aristocratic name, speaking to a man who is either a soldier or a man dressed as a soldier. And one of the things that one did was to go to these places in uniform and then pick up women in uniform. It was a kind of little sort of perversion, an exciting perversion. Here's a man sort of dressed as an artist, another one with an odd cap. We sort of go through, here's gyrating couples dancing, here are women dancing together, which doesn't mean what we think it means necessarily. And a whole group of figures in the background that are sort of drawn as if they're going in and out of focus and act as the setting for these portraits in the foreground. The most dramatic figure is this carrot-haired woman. And you'll see that Toulouse-Lautrec had a penchant for women with probably dyed orange hair or real orange hair, but brilliant orange hair. And this woman is given no identity whatsoever except her hair. We don't see her hands. We don't see her face. We see only her ear and this extraordinary knotted carrot-colored hair, which is the precise color complement of the green that suffuses the entire room. And it makes her hair seem like a lamp illuminating the center of the painting. Then there are three very clear portraits, and they're all precisely in silhouette, as if they're Renaissance medals or classical medals of an emperor or an empress shown strictly in profile. Two women, one hauntingly beautiful, powdered, so her face is terribly pale, her hair pulled back, this wonderful eye. She looks away from the action to a booth here on the side with its series of little sort of white things that you put drinks down on. I don't know what you call them. The man is looking out, a sort of homely woman with a double chin and, you know, lips, and who's sort of staring out into space, and a man who's looking fixedly at something that we cannot see. Probably some beautiful performer, somebody somewhere that we cannot see. And there's a sense that these people are alone together. We don't assume that any of the women are with each other, and we know that the man sitting on the other side of the barrier is not with any of the women. and the sense of being alone in a public place, the sense of playing roles and identities in a public place, and the sense of portraiture, which we do not remember feeling with the Renoir. Even though many of the figures were identified in the contemporary criticism, there is no head like that head or that head or that head that pulls out an individual identity from the melee of bodies in the background. Now, the club that Toulouse-Lautrec became the most involved in and represented the most often was the Moulin Rouge. And the Moulin Rouge was a boulevard club with this huge fake windmill in the front, playing on the Moulin de la Galette, which had actually had a real windmill in it because it was up on the hill. And the Moulin Rouge was a club for tourists and everybody, lower down the hill with an enormous garden, a big indoor room, and a huge stage. And here one sees Toulouse-Lautrec at the Moulin Rouge in the early part of the 1890s. This is a painting that's a little bit later than the Art Institute painting, and a painting of extraordinary quality. It was probably started in 1889. And if you look at it carefully, you can see a line here and a line here that separate one part of the canvas, this, from this extraordinary woman on the side and the bottom. And it's what's fascinating about the painting is that Toulouse-Lautrec or somebody painted it, then cut it down to make it a more traditional painting, and then put it back together again, because the canvas is the same canvas with the same weave on the inside and the outside. It's one of the great mysteries of the history of art. In it, one sees we're with a group. This is very different than the other painting, because here is a group of people, all of whom are identified. This is Jeanne Avril. We know her particular red hair. This figure on the right with her face lit up from the Klieg lights on the stage. The stage light is Mae Milton, the great performer with her funny little hat with those sort of like tentacles that come out of an insect's head on top. Her red lips, her hair, which is sort of dyed bright blonde. And she's this sort of ghost on the side of the painting looming up. Here is Tapie de Céloron, the tall cousin. And here in the center of the painting beneath Tapie de Céloron is Toulouse-Lautrec himself, representing himself not only as the viewer of this world, but as its regular inhabitant, and showing us the particular men and women, these men and women who are decidedly of the upper classes, playing in this extraordinary club. We see the Moulin Rouge by Toulouse-Lautrec in various and sundry ways. This is one at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. The first three that we've seen are at the Art Institute of Chicago. This one with this wonderful bourgeois woman in a beautiful pink dress and wonderful hat, and who is alone. And her aloneness is intensified in this because all of the figures are either turned away from her or looking at this couple dancing. And this wonderful, tall, elegant figure, male figure, with a woman doing a kind of version, a couple's version of the can-can, showing her legs and her dresses, and one feels the thinness of the covering of her dress, her carrot hair. And suddenly in this, we see this woman, and then we see another figure in back of her who we take perhaps to be a servant or somebody accompanying her in this place. This picture has this marvelous sort of social sense that she doesn't know quite what to do or where she is. And she is dressed completely inappropriately for the setting. And she stands out like this sort of pink, wonderful grande bourgeoise in the midst of brilliant depravity and in the midst of a whole group of men. She is not the tart who knows what to do with them. She is different. And Toulouse-Lautrec shows us that social difference very clearly. Now, Toulouse-Lautrec also painted lots and lots of portraits. One could do an exhibition of Toulouse-Lautrec's portraits, and they're all sorts of different kinds of people. from his mother and family members, fellow aristocrats, to members of the professional class, to bankers, to people that he met when he was working in the studios. This is a portrait at the Cleveland Museum of a man whose name is Monsieur Boileau. And Monsieur Boileau is obviously a grand bourgeois. He has a wonderful sort of silver-tipped cane. He's beautifully dressed, a really good hat. He's big enough, and he communicates to us by his girth and his pose, which in fact comes from a great portrait by Frans Hals, the Dutch 17th century painter, that he is prosperous and healthy and well-fed. He's not a man who we worry about in his future. He sits at a table with his the backgammon. Now, what are these things? I've forgotten the name of this game. Dominoes. His dominoes on the table, and he's drinking absinthe, or his companion is drinking absinthe. And what's fascinating about this is this is a portrait of Monsieur Boileau. It was exhibited as a portrait of Monsieur Boileau, and yet it is Monsieur Boileau not at work and not at home and not with a beautiful sort of setting of a French country property or hunting or doing something which a man of substance should do, but at a nightclub, out at the club at night, and with someone who is presumably us, the viewer, who's drinking absinthe. We are put into the role of his companion in the evening. And here he plays the games that not only Degas played, but Manet played, by pulling the viewer into the world of the portrait figure. Now, in some ways, the greatest and the most haunting and the most moving works of art by Toulouse-Lautrec are works of art that are made to represent in considerable detail and with an extraordinary pathos and humanity the world of the brothel. We've talked actually quite a lot about prostitution in France, and prostitution was essentially an industry in France. Part of that industry was regulated and legal in houses that were registered with registered prostitutes, and it was like okay. And a much larger and unknowable percentage of that world was illicit and illegal. And we've seen French artists play with this idea of what the woman alone is, and is that woman virtuous, and is she available to the male spectator, and all the little games of that sort of dance of propriety that takes place in the crowded city as entertainment district. We've seen, we haven't seen, but Degas, at one point in the late 1870s, did a whole series of little prints taking us on a tour of a maison close, of a legal registered brothel, where we see the male customers and the women sitting around in sofas and all of the sort of humor, sort of dirty humor of the life of the brothel. Toulouse-Lautrec actually betters Degas, not so much by showing us more of the brothel. In fact, we probably learn more about the brothel as a physical place from Toulouse-Lautrec's, from Degas' prints than we do from Toulouse-Lautrec's prints and paintings of it, but as a human place. Toulouse-Lautrec shows us the women of the brothel more or less independent of the men they service, and as human beings who interact in a strange and fragile and beautiful society with each other, and who live lives that are their own social lives are much more with other women than they are with the men who come in and out, even the ones who come habitually. Now, Toulouse-Lautrec had two projects that involved the brothel. One was a series of prints called Elle, E-L-L-E-S, which means women. She's, literally. It's the plural of she. And it's but it's the plural of she. And it is a whole series of prints investigating intimacies amongst women, sometimes tactile, sometimes conversational, in which the women of the brothels become human beings. And the other project is a series of paintings, sometimes with gouache, sometimes with oil, on cardboard or paper, which record his own direct interaction with the brothel. We know that Toulouse-Lautrec actually spent nights in brothels, that he lived amongst the women, that he would stay when all the male customers had left, That his interactions with them were beyond the kind of sexual services interactions, but were a form of full intimacy, and then he represents them in a way. Let's look at this wonderful painting called The Sofa, which is at the Metropolitan Museum, in which one sees these two women having a little chat at the end of an exhausting day. Fully human, fully fleshy, fully unattractive, fully unposing for men. And let's end with this extraordinary work of art in the Dallas Museum of Art, which represents a young prostitute who is required to take a bath every time after her sexual services. By law, she was required to do so. And her companion is getting her ready for the bath. And you look at the incredible rugged lines of pastel on this, her frail and thin body. And what's unbelievable about this work of art is that it's a pastel on sandpaper. And what he has done is to take the roughness of that material, of sandpaper, as it interacts with the pastel and create something infinitely fleshy and soft, the woman's skin. There is a sense of incredible poetry and beauty and sympathy in these pictures that Degas never reached.